Our first speaker will be Ira Cooper, senior systems software engineer from the Samba team, and his topic will be MathWorks, a case study in NUS.
Welcome. Thank you. So I'm going to warn you, probably the slides are going to fly a little fast because they are pictures, and this is a trimmed presentation that got brought back up to size. First good question is, who are we? Okay, we developed MATLAB and Simulink. Who here in the room knows what these products are? Raise your hands. A few people.
Do
know what these things are. If you do, raise your hand. Okay. So the big thing is that it's not just these products, but the toolboxes that go with them that helps really make this problem big. Okay. We're a fair-sized company, about 2,500 people, about 1,000 developers, spread across many countries, France, Germany, Japan. So this is just a small sample of areas we have things in. Okay, places where they've used our software includes things like the JPL Probe DS1 that went up, the Bell Tilt Rotor, modeling spreads and epidemics, and even Xerox modeling their printers. Okay, our stuff gets used in some strange spots and for some pretty important things. Okay, but what makes us interesting? Well, we have HPC scale, but we're not an HPC site. Okay, and by that, normally when you think of an HPC site, all the machines are the same. They're all running the same OS. Well, we don't do that, because we're a test lab, okay? So we have Windows 7, Windows XP, Linux, Mac OS, pretty much whatever we support. We've had Solaris in there in the past. Because of the way MATLAB works, where it uses the file system as a namespace, okay, it is constantly monitoring the file system. And we are also very small file intensive. Okay, contrast this to most HPC sites where you begin to think about large block I/O. Not so much here. Okay, to give you some idea of the size of our product, a sterile build for our product is about 24 hours. That's on SMB2. We have thousands of hours of linear test time that need to be done, and thousands of cores of compute power to apply to it. Okay. In addition to all of this, we get to have an enterprise environment to integrate with all those 2,500 users in it, large amounts of automation, and as you can tell, cross-protocol problems. You know, anytime you mix NFS and SMB, you get trouble. In addition, there's things we can't control. Unlike an HPC site, we bring in a lot of third-party stuff where we have no control over what's in there. We're agreeing with somebody's embedded compiler, embedded tooling. They don't design it for this type of environment. Okay? Performance and monitoring are critical to us as far as what we achieve. Okay, our speed as a group is critical to what we do as a company. The faster this system turns over things, as far as building and testing our code, the faster our developers get feedback, the more code we can get into the product, the more money we make. Okay? And we also end up with very high quality requirements. And if something happens 1,000 times, a lot of people can blow it off, say, small thing. For us, it'll happen a few times a week. So not such a small thing anymore. People really begin to complain, especially if it breaks one of those 24-hour builds and forces them to wake up and deal with it in the morning, and their job isn't done. So here you begin to see our design factors. High performance, high reliability, cost. And the reason why cost shows up is, once again, we kind of are an HPC site. Our cost per node matters to us deeply, okay? If it costs If we have to pay more for storage, we can't get as many nodes. That means jobs don't get done as fast. Okay, the 100K is actually a pretty reasonable number for us. We'd like to go even higher, and we'll go as high as we can. Okay. Introspection, we are a QA lab, plain and simple. The ability to look at these servers and figure out what is going on within them is key, because it allows us to debug problem. We have to figure out, when we get a problem report, where is it? Is it in the server? Is it in Microsoft's clients? Is it in our code? Is it in third-party code? Where is this problem coming from? And so being able to look on the server side deeply gives us a great deal of knowledge about what's going on. Okay? And when we do find these problems, as most of you know, 90% of the problem is really fixing it, is really finding it. Unfortunately, when we work with third parties, we often find the other 90% is getting it fixed. Okay? This is something that's true anytime you deal cross-organization. Okay? Priorities are not the same. And this isn't to cut, but it's more to say, we can work on our own schedules. We have our own priorities in these situations. You have your schedules, your priorities. Our other vendors have their schedules and their priorities. And there's nothing wrong with these things. It's just a matter that we have to meet ours. So another key question was, do we need high availability for running a batch system? And in the end, I coined this term, a deal with the devil. Okay, and I told my managers that the server will go down one day each year. I can't tell you when. It could be a day before you want to release the software. A day you don't care about. But it's going to go down a day a year. We can't say which it is. But we'll go much faster, and we'll cost less. And they bought in. Okay? And by and large, we've kept our end of the deal. Okay? We haven't had a heck of a lot of downtime. And we have met our performance goals. Okay? This is a deal with great simplicity. Timely support, because once again, we have open source. We can look. We can talk to people about the problem, even if we can't fix it ourselves. We can often illuminate it to others and talk about it in the correct terms. So it becomes much easier to get assistance if needed. Okay? And we understand our own priorities. Another one, once again, open source. This goes directly to our introspection goals. Okay? The ability to collaborate with our vendors. These are key things to us. We want to work with people as a partner, if not directly. Okay? That level of interaction makes things much simpler for us. ZFS. Believe it or not, I didn't say snapshots or anything else. I've actually got to call out ZFS here. We needed the capabilities it provided of RAID, snapshots, read caching, and write caching. There's nothing else that really matches it on the market right now. I know people are working towards the feature sets, okay, but right now, nothing has it and has the maturity. And we use those things. We use all of it so that we can meet our performance goals. Which drives us to the last piece, which is OpenSolaris and Illumos. And which is just really the logical extension of having chosen ZFS in many ways. Okay, another big one was, why did I end up using Samba? We tried kernel SIFS, but we couldn't get it running right due to permissions issues in our domain. And it didn't have SMB2. Likewise, seemed to be missing key functionality, which we needed. But we found that Samba had a very mature code base and a strong community. And this has led to more features and bug fixes. Okay, it's also led to good people to work with. So this is what we started off with, as hardware and software. We use Supermicro servers. pretty stock hardware, actually. This isn't exotic stuff, okay? It is server class, but it's not way out there. This isn't a $400,000 box. Okay, current specs are a little more exotic, but they're still not ridiculous. I mean, 24 SSDs, given what's happened in Thailand, is not as ridiculous as it used to be. Okay, we're building some HA servers now. We're kind of dabbling our foot in it with SAS Fabric in the back. But you'll see it follows the same basic type of design, ZIL, a lot of caching SSDs, same basic concepts. But on the read side, on the read ZIL side, we typically use Intel 320 series. On the write side, we flip between the X25E, and now we're using STEX. Once again, nothing you can't obtain is really pretty much an off-the-shelf part. That's been a long-standing goal of mine, is to keep us on the shelf parts, because that way, the more exotic your parts get, the more likely you are to have exotic failure. Has been a strong thing as we've worked on this project, we've realized. This is a plot from when we pre-production qualled. This is no joke. This is really what we did. Okay, the red is SM, the top red, I believe it's red, pardon me, I'm colorblind to red, but the top color is SMB2. The pinkish, reddish, purplish color underneath is NFSV3. Now let's compare that against what we actually do. I took this right from basically some days before we actually came to session. I went and found a busy server and pulled the data. You'll note it's lower, but it's not ridiculously low. Okay, you're looking at things tapping 100K. This is not the busiest server I've ever seen. Not by a long shot. But you can certainly see why the design goals are in place when you take a look at that load. And so you'll say, well, what's really going on in SMB2? This is what's going on. Op by op, basically we break it down using counters. This is the reason why we put those counters in way back when, so we could produce these plots to understand how many creates you're reassuring, how many closes, what's the load look like. And this tells us. Okay, you can see obviously we're heavily create and heavily close bound. That's over half of our ops. Okay. You can begin to see where we're, you know, when I say we're metadata driven, this backs that. Okay.
What's the client?
Client will be, for this run, you're going to find several Windows 7 clients, varying in size from 2 cores to probably 16, running 32 and 64-bit Win7. There is no XP. If I go back up, if there was XP, you would actually see green in this graph. So there's no XP, and I'd be showing you an SMB1 graph in addition, which we also have. What?
The NFS client?
NFS client will be Linux and Mac, both V3. We choose NFS V3 because of interoperability within our own environment, not because it's the best thing for SIFS interoperability, but just trying to get NFS V4 and trying to get the Mac and the Linux boxes to all talk the same thing and then get the server to agree to it's about as complex as dealing with SIFS ID mapping in reality. Those are the op counts. That's how many ops of each protocol we're doing in a stack graph. That's all it is. I don't have a graph of the client shown. The reason we find that there isn't actually that much more. In fact, you'll actually see that the NFS traffic spikes more if you read the graph. And the reason for that is we allow much more NFS traffic because it doesn't load us down as badly. It doesn't hurt us as badly to let it through. We actually have some gating factors in there to stop us from overwhelming the server. In fact, if you look on the next slide down here, you'll see actually here that's nearly a straight, it's a pretty straight line at 40K. That's actually a limit that's put in place. Because if you begin to get much above it, we found that the performance times go nonlinear and start acting poorly. One of the things we want to do is begin working on that so that we don't face that problem, so that we can raise that bar up. Okay, here's CPU use during that same time. More questions? Okay. And here's actually write ops to the disks. The high line you'll see across the top of that, that's going to be the write caching SSDs. Then underneath, you'll see the actual disks. You can see where those write caching SSDs are saving us a tremendous amount. Where it doesn't look, the back end can take this, but I've seen these plots up as high as 3,000 or 4,000. And that hitting a 19 disk back end isn't going to fly. No, we haven't. That hasn't been the case. We should pull another one of our early ones to check it, but we haven't dropped an SSD due to wear yet. Just some of that, I guess, has to do with choosing the right componentry in the right spots. This machine is SLC actually. The actual drives used here are in a previous generation. The modern drives are what I quoted. These drives would be X25Es. So they are SLC, but I don't think their wear characteristics are hugely out of line with what you'll find in a really good MLC drive nowadays, like the S-Techs we run. I mean, you're not talking orders of magnitude differential anymore, I don't think. But the wear down, as far as these things go, we consider them disposable. In other words, if we burn it out, it's a caching drive. Our systems will continue operating. So then we just replace it. I mean, it sounds kind of harsh when you view it that way, but consider the cost of trying to buy an MLC drive and you say, an SLC drive, and then you go, well, we might burn an MLC drive, maybe. And if we do, we just put another in. It's a good hedge, actually. It's a good bet. There's nothing wrong there, in my mind. On the read side, once again, you can see where the high line is our SSDs, the low line is the actual drives. You can see where those SSDs are saving us from beating on our back ends. And once again, this isn't the most extreme I've seen. So this gives you some idea of why, in reality, we made some of the choices that sound like, yeah, it's a nice choice, but why would you do these things? Okay, this is why we did it. Okay? This is our actual cache miss ratios all the way through the SSDs and through everything. This is expressed as a ratio, not a percentage. And you can still see that there's some significant miss in here. I'm not too worried about the piece on the end because I don't believe it's at a high IOP time. I can go back up here and check, and it's not really that high. You can see the writes dove off by then. So that doesn't look like it's actually causing problems. So seeing high miss rates at times of low activity is not something to deeply worry about. But you can see during the run, we're down underneath that 5% line we want to be under. We'd like to be underneath 1, and we're not too bad on that. We're certainly under 2.5 for most of our heavy-duty work. On this machine, it's probably 900 gig of SSDs up front. The numbers are just going up over time because we can buy better hardware and we're following the commodity trend. That's the whole thing is what doesn't, we trickle out and then it helps defend it. the whole thing is about defending the drives, defending the back end, because the back end can only do so much. Obviously, when we go to pure SSDs, this is going to be less of an issue, but it's still, the write load's still an issue. You can't let all that hit your MLC SSDs. So actually, we do maintain a write caching SSD in that mix just to protect. It's a safety margin. So this is how many system calls we'll actually execute during that period. Okay, I've seen these graphs up as high as about 3.5 million during the time intervals. Most all of this is going to be FCNTL locking traffic to TDB files and stat. Those two will basically split this load basically around 45-45 at least. 45%-45% at least here. The underlying line, green line here, is the number of mutex misses. This is when we go for a mutex and we can't get it. So that's, I plot these two against each other to see, and they usually do trend fairly well together to get an idea of what's actually going on. People have asked about read and write during these same intervals. It's a mainly read-bound load, but you can certainly see, 25 megaseconds throughout most all of the time here. So it's not, there's not no writing going on here. You have to kind of build around the whole of the system. Okay, so overall, it's been a success story. Management's been very understanding of the effort involved because we're hands-on. When there's problems in the lab, they want them to be in our stuff. Ironically, it sounds kind of weird because they know we can get in there and fix it and get it done. Okay? And this has been a really, when you first think about it, it sounds kind of weird, and then you feel actually kind of reassured by it. Okay? The bad thing is when we first started with SMB2, we had some issues. We've certainly had our share of Solaris and Open Solaris platform issues, pure Samba issues. But we've had issues with every platform we've brought in. This is not unexpected. Whenever you bring a new NAS vendor in after you've had the same NAS vendor a while, you're going to have problems. Plain and simple. It's just reality. And I'm sure everybody in the room can kind of understand that if you've actually done the customer engagements. So the first thing I'm going to talk about was something we ran into qualifying 3.6.2. We ran into what became a denial of service attack on Samba. Okay, our pre-production testing showed a large spike in CPU, and I'll lead you through basically the investigation we did and how we found it. Credits to Yuzhong and to Jeremy, who just scooted. So we basically got back, the new Samba release isn't performing well. It's pegging our CPUs. Why? This is what you get back. This is really what you see. Okay, what's wrong? This is what we had in our first, doing the same type of workload. This is the first set of CPU. That's the second. We've got a problem. Good, bad. Pretty much. Okay, syscall versus mutex. This is the pretty standard looking graph for us. Once again, you'll see the same type of shapes where they follow each other. One's about a million under the other. This is pretty normal looking for us. Okay? Compare that to this. Something's wrong. Okay? The graphs very clearly point this out to us, and there's no ambiguity, there's no mistaking that there's something very wrong in the system. The question is what? Okay? We know it isn't the environment, so we know it's the code, okay? We get one of our, go ahead, question, comment? We had an observation from one of our QEs that connections were taking longer to establish than they should. Okay, so we actually went ahead and added a metric to our monitoring system. Accept calls a second. So basically, we monitor the accept call using dtrace, and we plot it. And say, hey, what's going on here? So you can see, normally in this kind of a load, this machine's doing about 250 connections a second. Well, this is what it looks like with the Git 3.6 code. So once again, we can see this is why we're having a problem. We can't accept as many connections as we want to. So, you know, this really does shed some light into pretty much exactly where your problem's going. Okay? It's not, you know, it's got to be somewhere pretty far up front in the system. Okay? So we took this aside and actually tested it. And what we did is we ran SMB client and sets of loops just connecting and disconnecting to a dev server. Okay? And this is what the CPU plot looks like. You can see. And this is what the accept call rate looks like. And you can really see the problem begin to kick in here. You can see there's definitely something going on. When we accept and continuously keep accepting things, we're losing performance. And there's no question of it now. Okay? Syscall versus mutex, you can see where we have the normal looking graph and we transition into the bad graph. So it becomes really obvious. This is what's wrong. Okay? We now have it isolated. We have something that reproduces our problem. Okay? From here, we knew from other servers and from our experience, nothing does this to us. This isn't the plot we've ever seen before of something. We didn't bother bisecting, we just used dtrace. It showed that there was a talc destructor being fired. It was taking way too long. From there, it was pretty easy to track down what was actually going on and actually send in a patch. Okay? And I submitted that patch. Okay? I actually wasn't aware that Talik had good debugging hooks at the time. I just worked it because it was relatively simplistic. There was another memory leak that was related that was found at the same time. LibuMem was used to find the actual leak because it was faster than Valgrind in this situation. Once again, the platform differences help. Okay? So this whole thing gives you the anatomy of the kind of problems we work. This shows you the server-side anatomy of it, but when we see something that looks abnormal, we actually have enough back data, enough detailed data to tell us that it's weird. Tell us something's off. Okay, this is not, you know, it's not, that type of stuff, as far as I know, isn't usual. Okay. Another problem we ran into very early on is Solaris 10 only allowed a user to be in 32 groups. And it would kill our servers if we tried to use more. No, seriously, this was a problem for us. Samba teams correctly said it's an AD issue, that, you know, you should be allowed in all the groups AD says so. And we kind of looked at it and said, that's not a concern for us. We know our environment. We know the situation we're in. We know that, by and large, we're caring about one group in our situation. It's in the list. Okay. And we went and patched our version and went about our lives. Even though my patch wasn't taken upstream, we could agree to disagree. We could still move forward with our project. We still were able to get these things to production. And this is a key thing to note, because this is the kind of thing that your customers are caring about. We want to get our products out there. We want to get these things up, running in our environment under the constraints we live under. The rest of the constraints are some concern to us, but, you know, we have to balance it against the previous, which is getting it out into our environment and working. We want to work with people, but we can agree to disagree. Okay. Another one that we've hit just about every vendor with, I think, at this point, is compound create notify. Every so often, even our old server vendors weren't replying correctly, and it causes disconnects, which causes our builds to fall over. And once again, 24-hour build, bad. So we diagnosed this issue, but because it's only showing up really at one site, people didn't care. You know, we use Notify probably more than most sites do. And because of that, things that are, you know, that 1,000, 10,000 will show up for us in the Notify areas and in these areas much more often. So, what did we do? Even by the time we got a fix from this particular vendor, it turned out to take the bug from what was probably about about 1,000 occurrence to about 1 in 1,000,000 occurrence, which was still too frequent. And I'm estimating those numbers, but the magnitude's about right. It probably went down in frequency about 1,000 times, but we were still getting hurt. Okay? We really wanted to roll SMB2 out. We had a 50% improvement in build time sitting behind this. Okay? So we need to get this out the door. This isn't a question, this is an answer we're being told. Okay? So it's a critical priority within the company at this point. So eventually, we decided to do it ourselves. Okay, we worked in-house to develop what I would call an awful and horrible prototype patch. Volker has seen it, and he'll probably agree with you, with me on this one. And they turned it into something that was usable. Yeah. And then we worked with them on final QA. And the whole thing, we turned it around in about 2 weeks. But compare that to trying to get through the layers of any, I mean, we have the same problem if we were to interact with people. I understand it, but when you can work internally, those barriers drop. And that makes life a lot simpler. Okay? In conclusion, Samba and OpenSolaris have made our storage infrastructure much more effective. We found it to be a great way to give back to the community. Working with the Samba team has really been a joy for us. It's really been great to work with them. Okay, and really, it's been the powers of OpenSolaris and the powers our team have added a unique capability to the Samba team in my mind. The type of things we do are not normal within our deployments, as far as I can tell. So, do I have any questions? Do you want me to flip back through some slides? Go ahead, Christian.
How did you create these counters for the various SMB2 operations? So on an earlier slide, you had this, I had so many creates and notifies and so on.
How did I create them? Actually, they're inside they're actually performance count. So Christian's question is, how is it these things created? So I'm going to flip up to the graph involved, a little high. There we go.
This one, yeah, this exactly.
Graph. So it turns out, actually, I put in those counters.
Ah.
Okay, I actually went into the Samba code and, you know, put in the performance counters for this. And this patch is accepted in master today, and it's accepted in 3.6. So you can enable these counters yourself, and it will count every op. If you actually look in I think it's SMB2 server.c, you'll find that these counters wrap the call to every op in the actual routine that breaks out the actual packet processing.
Okay, I will look there. That patch must have gone past me. Okay, thanks.
No problem. You? Matthew? Sure.
So we discussed a little bit about this. My question was, can you reveal which kind of NAS you were using before?
I'll be nice to the vendor.
Okay.
I think a lot of people know who they are, but I'll be nice. Any other questions in the room? Anything that's where you want to hear more about what we do, and I'll just freestyle on it. Go ahead.
Do you utilize the snapshot capabilities of CFS, and how do you implement that?
What capabilities?
The snapshot.
Oh, absolutely, we use it. We use it all over the place. That's part of why we chose ZFS, is the snapshotting abilities. That's what we do. So we actually have automated routines within our own system that will go ahead and create snapshots on the machines for us when we need them, so we can work with it. Yeah, absolutely.
So you do it kind of script-based directly on the server?
Right now, yeah.
Sorry.
Right now it's directly on the server script based, but you know, it wouldn't take much effort to turn that into a web service or whatever we wanted. You know, it's a nice thing about having a, you know, a programmable file server is, well, we can make the API what we need it to be. Questions?
Wow. Any more comments?
Yep, I have a few minutes here. Well,
okay.
Yeah, I would like just like to thank you for all this analysis. And one thing that we need to take away from here is that we need to improve the TDB performance. And I mean, we've been working together on that and tried various approaches, but this IPC performance needs to improve. And
yeah, I'd agree with that. Also, this is part of what, in my mind, the other answer to this is we need to work on 2.2 and we need to get directory releases in place. Okay, that's the other way of attacking the same problem in many ways, because probably we're going to move to Win8 build machines, I'm going to guess, probably within a year or two, at least. But they're both things that are needed long-term, because long-term what's going to happen is if I give them more, they'll use more. That's the nice thing about this lab. Okay, they'll just keep pulling. I don't have Samba servers set up with it, and I don't know how much, and I don't think we set up the Win8 servers with the relevant code so that we could actually check the benefit. We certainly could. It's a valid question and probably something that should be measured before I make that rash assumption. But judging just by how much we gain in the fake oplocks cases and we gain in some of the other cases and how much notify we use in some other things, I'm going to guess it isn't going to hurt us. I don't know if there's any optimizations with direct releases and notify when you ask for a notify if you're holding a direct release, if those two get clapped together or not. If so, that'll help us. If not, it may hurt. We'll have to see. Yep. Because it's a heck of a, it turns out to be better than pulling them. Because MATLAB believes that the file system is a namespace for it. So when I type foo at the MATLAB prompt, it'll go search through the path and find foo. But instead of actually searching, it actually knows. It knows the answer and it'll just go to the right file. It's actually nice. But it does mean that we can use a lot of change notifies. That's it.
Any more questions? If not, thank you, Ira.
Thank you. I'm glad we're short.